Like to introduce, because I used to visit him when I worked at the Jefferson Assembly. I was making this paper. I was making all those plates. You were down there in the pit. And all collect that about. These rallies will be on the table and appreciate the donation for them. You know, you have to make money somehow. So they'll be on the table. Thank you.
All right.
Why you the money to?
Me.
That's you.
I would like to stand up.
Okay.
Stand up, Lynn.
All right, Lynn.
All right.
My name is Marsha Lynn. Some people refer to me as Lynn, some Marsha. Marsha Lynn. I feel a great deal of poignant.
Louder, Lynn.
I feel a great deal of poignancy at this gathering. I waited to speak. I'm a reluctant participant. They've been asking me from the very beginning of the formation of the forum if I was going to participate. I'm no longer an activist. I'm probably what you might refer to as an armchair revolutionary or something. I write. I go to work every day. I have a great deal of memories about my life and the movement. But I feel a great deal of poignancy. My heart is very much touched, because when you're talking about a group of people who have been in the struggle and have known one another for almost half a decade, some of us,
half a century.
You're dealing with human beings. When I think about how I was introduced to the movement, I was a girl. I was 14 years old. I am the youngest, I believe, member of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. I was the youngest, I believe. And I came in as a student. And when I think about how these gentlemen, General here, John Williams over here, they were the elders of the movement, and I was a kid. So when I look around at the population at this conference, and I see so many younger people, it only enforces to me how fast these years have gone. That now I am an elder, and many of you are the kids that are sitting up on their people's knee wanting to know, what should we do? And so that fills me with a great deal of sadness, of just a recognition of the passage of time. We are people and we are human beings up here. We have a number of relationships that have gone on all these years. We're some of us are ex-husbands, ex-wives. Some of us haven't spoken to each other in years, because we're human beings with human issues that go on with one another, and so that also gives rise to a certain amount of poignancy and joy at the fact that, you know, despite all, we're still, you know, together. We are still conversing with one another. So I just wanted to open up and say that. I was a child, and I was a 14-year-old going to Highland Park High School, which is a city within the city of Detroit, which is basically, I would say, ground zero of the decimation of the infrastructure of this town, is in Highland Park, Michigan, because it was the nexus of the auto industry. The headquarters of the Big Three were in Highland Park, and so it was a town that had the benefit of a significant tax base that was caused by so much auto industry money. I grew up in what one might call a middle class life. My father was a businessman. My father probably never wanted any of us to work in any kind of factory. He had been a businessman all of my life. And I grew up in the music business because he sold records and produced records. So when I decided to become involved in the movement, I'm going to say some things here because I'm a very honest person, you know. And a lot of young people that are here, and I'm not saying that in a patronizing way, it's just I can see a lot of y'all younger than I am. And and many people become attracted to the movement off of more than just the social conditions. Many create surrogate families of movement people because of trauma in your homes, as did I. My home was plagued with alcoholism and the chaos that comes from that. And so I gravitated to this surrogate family of people who took me under their wing, and I became active that way, and I think people should be honest about that in their hearts too, you know. Be clear on why you're involved in certain kind of things, because it'll keep you out of certain kinds of trouble you can get in the struggle. Want to acknowledge the role that for some people that addiction and alcoholism in the movement caused. You know, this is real, and I'm sorry. And so these are some of the things that can also derail struggles, derail human beings. That being said, I became involved in the struggle at 14. I was on a date with this gentleman here.
Anybody can get lucky.
We were on our first date. We were on our first date, and we were all dressed up, and we were going to see Roberta Flack, Donnie Hathaway, and Isaac Hayes. And I was all fixed up. My mom had got me all fixed up. And we got to the arena, and there were gentlemen out there passing out leaflets. And I had never seen anything like this before. I had seen the struggle on television of in the South and dogs biting people and people fighting back, but I had never seen this in our area. We had known that the Black Panthers were organizing and that, but to see these brothers out here passing out leaflets was just astonishing. And I told him, I said, when we go back to school on Monday, we're going to hook up with these people, and we did. So I'd like to say that I was the girl that he really wanted to marry, that when he was talking about maybe originally. Except for the fact that a few years later, I ended up having my first child by this gentleman.
DNA, I need the Maury show.
TMI.
That's all right. I'm saying that to say that life is more than a bunch of political lines. Life is more than a bunch of slogans. You know, these are real people. We're people, you know, that have gone through a number of trials and struggles and everything else. These two men are best friends today. They're best friends today. And I am proud of my association with them and the fact that they have a fondness for me, you know. So anyway, we would go and pass out leaflets. We would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning before school and pass out leaflets in the plant. General and them were organizing at Dodge, Maine. Dodge, Maine was where they made Dodge cars, and it was a city.
Yes, it was.
There's no way to describe the massiveness of industrial production in Detroit. Dodge, Maine was a city within the city of Hamtramck, which is a city within the city of Detroit. And the first time that they took me to go pass out these leaflets, it was 5 in the morning, it was cold outside, and we're in a truck. We were driving a truck. I mean, he was driving, I couldn't drive, I was a kid. And we go up this hill, there was a hill that approached Dodge Main. And as we went up this hill and we got to the crest of that hill, Dodge Main was a specter. It was an industrial land. And I will never forget, General said, you know what? Anything a person ever want, they can get right here at Dodge Main. Well, being a young girl, you know, I sort of had a vague idea that he meant all kind of even bad things. You know, what does he mean, you know? But he was just talking about the self-containment of Dodge Main. The fact that it was actually a city within a city, within a city. And we would go and we would pass out leaflets at that plant. Part of our duty as young students, Warren was one of the students. We did this in order to give support to those workers because the workers couldn't stand outside the plant, outside their own plant, and pass out leaflets. So we students did that, and we also organized within our schools, our own schools. They talked about the language and all that was used. This is my personal feeling. When I look back on some of the leaflets that we created, I cringe. I'm ashamed, really. I mean, you know, I'm telling you how I feel. I'm talking about me. Because I think some of our language and the things that we said were just vile to me. And I think that they expressed more than political outrage. I think they were expressions of some of the trauma that we were experiencing as people, as children, in very difficult, dysfunctional homes. We had so much anger and so much stuff going on that some of this stuff just came out just crazy. And that's just my feeling about it, you know, but, you know, I can have that. I don't want to hold you up any longer. It was a time of great tumultuousness and excitement. There was just an excitement to those times that I suppose that this is exciting here, but I don't know if it could rival the excitement of those times because it seemed like the whole culture was just in upheaval during those days. I note that on television, there has been virtually no coverage of this event here in this city. I just wanted to say that. We were at the Eastern Market last night at what I think they call it the Leftist Lounge. And there were, I'm sure, 10,000 people there.
It seemed like it.
And at midnight, there were no negative incidents that I heard of. There was nothing but a peaceful, good time. Thousands of people, and I haven't heard anything on the news about it, you know. So that just will tell you, you know, what you know, it just goes to show you something. And I just also wanted to stress about Detroit itself that it's very difficult for me to see people come to the city and concentrate on the destruction of Detroit. That's very hard. Just like when you see that movie about the working class. In that first movie, the working class is always depicted as white. And it was very clear that even then, workers were working here. But it's like it's depicted if you have the working class and then you have us, as if we are not a part of the working class. And then, so now you have this phenomenon in which you have this destruction of Detroit as if blacks never lived well here.
That's right.
I assure you. Detroit, Michigan is where the highest paid working class in human history lived.
Yes.
I want you to know who we are here.
Describe it.
I want you to know that the Supremes and the Temptations arose out of the proletariat of this city because they expressed the elegance and the beauty of the working people here in Detroit. We are not a city that consists of ruins, of torn up buildings, of train stations boarded up. That is what has come because of the decimation of this infrastructure.
It is.
But that is very difficult, you know, for us to handle. On the one hand, we want you to see where the economy has led this city, but on the other hand, we also want you to know this is not who or what we are. So I wanted to say that. I am a Christian woman, and I have had a very long path to that. I would say that I would encourage anyone who in their struggle, who's a younger person, who wants to hold on to their spiritual core, do that. Do that. Don't abandon that. It's very important. The last thing I wanted to say is people ask a lot about what happened to the movement. You know, all of this stuff we're talking about, what happened to it? Well, what happened is that we won. Yes, we That's did. What happened. We won. We won. And because we won that phase of the movement in which we were the most engaged. The struggle for equality within the workforce, the struggle throughout the areas of the community that we were struggling in, we won those struggles. But that means that there's just more that has to be done. This was not a defeat. This was the victory that took place here. I would just give a plug. I write about music today. And you can read my writings on Marcia Music at WordPress.com. And I write about Detroit in these things because I think it's very important to understand that the expressions of music, music expresses a reality. And the industrialization that created a prior form of music, such as Motown, and the industrial beat, the beat of industry, the beat of factory life, that Berry Gordy heard and transmitted onto record is a different beat than what we see today. Because young people today have grown up with the oral sounds of technology and electronification. And it creates a different sound and even a different physical movement of the body. I do write about this and about how difficult it is for men to make love songs to young women because they can never hope to express their love in a house, in a home. That's why people make records called You Remind Me of My Jeep, because they can't make I Got Sunshine on a Cloudy Day. No. Because it's an entirely different economic underpinnings to their love. So with that, I'll close. Thank you very much.
Just a quick note, Lynn did not mention she was the first woman president.
First black.
And well, you black, baby.
Yeah.
And first of the Bakers Union.
Yes, uh-huh.
Of the Bakers Union.
Here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Here in Detroit. What you will also find on her page, Marcia Music, is an excellent story about being a young woman, two young women, under factory conditions and how they express themselves, right? All of this is good stuff, but she left off the I was president part.
Yes,
yeah. You know what I mean?
All right.
Hello and good afternoon. Is it afternoon yet?
Oh, yeah.
Close. I'm Marion Kramer, and I Lynn talked about she was the youngest person. I think I was the youngest.
No, you weren't.
And I think I'm still younger than this panel. I want y'all, before I begin to say anything, I want y'all to meet a person that has always supported us and been out here with us. And I was so happy when I ran into him in the poverty workshop, and in the one I said, come on, you got to go with me. This is a person also that's in the music business. And if you ever have the opportunity and have a satellite radio, like I keep in my car, I won't even let Baker take my car sometimes. Please listen to him. This is Dave Marsh.
Marion just said, come on, I'm going to my next workshop. And I said, well, where Marion leads, we go.
Thank you.
We had more people in the world like that, we wouldn't even be here. We'd be wherever she went, I'd rather be.
Yeah. That's right.
But I think probably nobody in this room, maybe Marcia, knows that actually I am here today because believe. And how that works is,
they want you to speak.
I was here today, I'm here today because of the league, and I'm on satellite radio today because of the league. Because when I went to college at Wayne State University, John Grant, Luke Tripp, a bunch of other fellas ran the student paper, the South End. And I went to work for the South End. And if you went to work for the South End in 1968 and 1969, you were going to know a lot about drum, you were going to know a lot about Elrum, you were going to know a lot about the league. And I never lost that. Because what it gave me was the understanding of, first of all white people need to know that other people outnumber them. And that it is not our God-given right to run every damn thing. And this is the trick. And that's a good thing. That it's time for that to change. And it has begun to change in some very visible ways, some very invisible ways, you know. And then you meet people like Marion and Marcia and you realize, well, male, that's another whole set of issues. But, you know, and that needed some adjustment too, and that's it. But for me, the clearest vision I ever saw expressed of how working people, because, you know, my dad was a railroad worker, and I didn't recognize hardly the world that was changing around me and that struggle. And the clearest people who saw a vision to the future were the League of Revolutionary Black Women in my time. And that's all I can testify here today, but maybe that's enough, is that I would not be here today, I would not be on a satellite radio tomorrow. I would not have written 25 books without the League of Revolutionary Black Women. For this gentleman, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Again, welcome. And I'm so honored to be on a panel with all these good senior citizens. Senior citizens, retired, some of them, and some of them on their way to retire. But we're so honored to be here at the U.S. Social Forum.
Yeah.
Now, how did I get in the drum movement first, and then into the League of Revolutionary Black Workers? I was working in the community, not bothering them at all. Right? I was working as an organizer coming out of the civil rights movement and working at the old WCO, West Central Organization, on the Alinsky type of organization, and fighting Alinsky because I didn't agree with some of his tactics. Saul Alinsky out of the Industrial Area Foundation. And who do I meet? Well, I first met John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden someone came over to the office, the community office where we were working, and it was General Baker and Glanton Dydell. And they wanted to use, we had this great machine at the time. It was great technology for where we could burn our stencils.
A Gestetner.
That's right.
A Gestetner.
It was a great revolutionary way to be able to deal with these stencils, and you didn't have to use a stylus because the stylus was already on the machine. And we were just fascinated by this machine. But here, General Baker and Glanton Dydell wanted to put out some leaflets. I ended up at the office that day and had to help them to put these leaflets out. And all of a sudden, a relationship developed that every time they think they had to burn some leaflets or something like that, they would be calling me. I said, I don't know these guys. I'm out here with the Black Club fighting against urban renewal, fighting against Wayne State being able to expand at the time. And they talking about they got to burn a leaflet tonight. But through burning those leaflets and getting those leaflets together, I was able to develop a relationship. Glanton thought he was my father. And I had to let him know I was a grown woman because I made it up here. You know, out of the civil rights movement, I made it to Detroit. But, you know, a relationship developed. And, the kind of relationship developed, I knew I had to fight some male supremacists. All right? But the relationship developed because all of a sudden, I've become a member of the staff of WCO. And I get a request from the director, Marion, can you help General and the fellows down there at the ghetto to put out, we weren't at the ghetto there,
The ghetto coffee shop.
Yeah, I guess we were there. To put out the inner city voice. I said, wait a minute, I'm an organizer in the community. I have enough Black clubs to work with. I have enough to do with the city of Detroit and the old city council trying to fight back urban renewal. What is this extra stuff they talking about? I agree. And then I had to go down and hear his mouth every day of how to produce a newspaper. It was so funny because I would sit up there and read all those articles. Talking about Lady Bird, I'm not going to tell you what they call Lady Bird, Lady B. That was Johnson's wife, you know, out looking at flowers everywhere as we over here being exploited and oppressed and the plants and all this stuff. It was really a joy to sit down there and read not only those articles, but to try to correct some of the stuff they were putting in there at the time. Then all of a sudden I got recruited. I get this letter saying you have now been recruited to come to a secret meeting. I get to this meeting, and it's a night that is snowing. And, you know, we had connected General and John and all of them up with all these folks in the community, the various churches that were coming forth and letting us use vans to distribute leaflets and all that. So all the resources we had, we gave it to them also. We met in this church. It was right across the street from Ford Hospital. It was a Presbyterian church. Because we had a lot of progressive ministers at that time, particularly the priest, you know, at that time. I don't know, the other person that was in my life at that time, too. He had me arrested, I think. Yeah. No, I had George arrested. Out here fighting against how that's George back there. That was out in the community also with us, fighting against fighting for housing and all that type of stuff. But we in this particular church, we held a meeting. I went to this meeting, and I get this orientation from a few of these folks that we're going to build a Black People's Liberation Party. Yeah. I said, well, why am I the only woman here? Yeah. They said, you were not the only woman that was invited. You were the only one that made it to the party. And at every meeting after that, I was the only one. But what I knew, I finally began to understand it was my connection with the community. I stayed in the community. I was grounded in the community. I worked in the community day in and day out. I lived the community. And I knew a lot of the Black clubs and all that type of stuff. That's all I was about. And I had the struggle with them day in and day out. They always talked about the point of production. It's where we have to be. I said, and the point of production's got to come where? In the community.
That's right.
And you better get the support of that community to help you at the point of production. Because to put out those leaflets, who did they have to use? The students, and to talk to those women who were beating their husband upside the head almost, but walking out and that type of stuff, they had to come get us. So we became an intricate part, the women, of the drum movement at first, and then the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. And let me tell you, it was the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. And we must write this history. We've been talking about writing this history for a long time. The League came about because of some we had to find out which direction, how were we going to move at the time when we were kind of splitting in the League. It was the women committee, a lot of us, that came forth and said, we're not doing nothing else. We pulled a strike.
A strike on the strikers.
Oh, yeah. That was, I mean, they thought they were some bad motor scooters, but they had to come up against us, you know. We pulled a strike, and the strike was that we were not going to put the paper together no more until we get some demands met. And one of the biggest demands was, you always coming to us, they'll put out the leaflets to put the paper together, to print the paper, because we was running those mimeograph machines. And what was that other big machine we used to use?
That.
Not the good step.
The Martilit
1250 Martilit.
With the good smelling ink.
Yeah, I went out to GM for 1 whole week and worked at GM and learned how to run one of those machines. We sent some people to class to learn how to run a IBM Composer and to put these papers out. But we decided that until we get some direction in this organization, and began to have an overall organization, we wasn't going to do nothing. Because you always want to use us. You always, you don't want us on the leadership or nothing like that. So we sitting down. We wasn't going to do nothing. It was people like Gracie Wooten, Cassandra Smith, his first wife, Arlene.
Lorraine.
Who else can always?
Lorraine.
Helen Lorraine. Jones.
Helen Jones, one of the biggest printers.
Edna Watson.
Come on. Jeanette, his sister.
Right.
And see, they couldn't run the organization without us. Right? Right, Lynn?
Oh, and Mabel.
Mabel, right.
Got Mabel. Yeah.
And they forgot about it. And there's always an old saying that Nick Lennon said it. A slave that gets a weapon and don't use it deserve to be a slave. Well, they were about to become some more slaves at that time. Because they didn't realize that weapon that they had in us. But through that, it came about that the executive board finally sit their butts down and decided that we needed the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. And we built the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. Because I had, not only did I have an assignment from them to, help with the paper and all that stuff, but I had brought in a lot of youth from Unicorn and all the young people Northwest. But at the same time, when we connected up, let me back up to what John was saying with the Panther, I had taken a vacation and I came back after 2 weeks. And I get this call from the ghetto, come here, we got something to tell you. We just assigned you to the Black Panthers to work within the Black Panthers Party and to help educate the Black Panther Party. I said, what? The Black Panther Party? We went in there, just like John said, to educate those young people. I took a gang of young folks, took them with me because I was in the process of organizing against the increase in public housing. Took them right over to Jeffrey Public Housing and started picketing Jeffrey. Took them over to Dodge, Maine, and had them to become some of the people that were participating in those distribution of those leaflets at the time. These young people didn't know what they were getting into. Trying to unite, and I have young people from the west side and from the east side, and if you know the history of Detroit, there's always been a division between the east and the west by Woodward Avenue. Well, Woodward Avenue is the dividing line. But these young people were really excited once they were able to see what was happening at Dodge, Maine, and see what some of these workers were doing out here. And they became, some of them did emerge as leaders in the movement and what have you. And we were in connection with them for years. But, these women that were a part of the league, be they students, be they housewives, working or what have you, they played a hell of a role in helping to shape this organization. Mm. Now, you didn't hear too much about us, but we were there. We were on the picket lines. We were doing work in the office. And we were out at different demonstrations, and we did not back down. Because we didn't back down from them. Why would we back down from any administration or anything like that? So, you know, I was proud to be a part of this organization, because this organization helped me lay the groundwork. I mean, understand the role of the workers in this society. And from that, like John said, and I don't feel like talking no more, and that's kind of hard for me to say that, I was able to help go to another level as far as organization. You know, we got called, we were called, just like the U.S. Social Forum was attacked prior to, two or three weeks prior to the Social Forum happening. We were attacked on TV, in the newspaper, and all, saying a bunch of radicals are coming to town. We better get the police, the FBI, and ICE, and all the rest of them in here. You know, because they tried to paint the picture that we were coming here, you were coming here, and we were here, and we were going to tear this city up. How the hell are you going to tear this city up? It's already been torn up. The corporations already tore the city up, and they know how they're rebuilding and downsizing for their benefit at our expense. We're trying to build something for the future, you know, and that's, you know, we understand that. So, you know, it's the same thing that they piled upon the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, mm-hmm. saying that we were nothing but a bunch of radicals and that all we wanted to do was, you know, tear up stuff. But let me tell you, it was some of the most smartest people I had ever met. And I'm so happy that, on the one hand, I helped raise a lot of their children and a lot of them. And I'm so happy they've grown and gone. But they still come through the house, hey, like they live in there. And I love it, every bit of it. So I'm happy to be here to be able to share this. But we got a better, like, and I think everybody kind of talked to it. It's a different situation than when the league was built.
Right.
This is not the civil rights movement. This is not the time when the league was built. We never thought that we'd be able to see technology expand to the level that it is expanded to.
Yes.
Production is different now. And they don't need all of us to work no more. And I want to tell you one little story and then I'm through. I remember when I met Claire McClinton back here, Squeaky. She needed a job. And she went to Cadillac and stood out there every day for 5 days knocking on the door and saying, "You got a job yet?" Until they finally hired her. They hired her. That was the kind of persistent people that we had in you know, in this organization. But you know, it's different than that now. They don't need her now to produce. They don't need Waistline. The Bakers Union sure don't need Lynn, because Lynn did not take no stuff from none of them. Not from the company nor the union. You know, they don't need none of us out here no more. And I see Miss Esag, they don't need you back in the factory no more neither. So, you know, it's up to us here. They tell them, "You don't need us, but we need each other, and we're going to build a better future."
That's right.
Thank you for letting us start.
Excuse me, one second.
What's she saying?
From New York, that belongs to an organization named Drum. Well, y'all stand up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
they named themselves after our experience.
All right. Exactly.
I'm sorry, we got a little struggle early. One of the people we forgot to mention, to pay honor to, is a woman that worked at Wayne State, and her joy was be able to retire. To retire to do more work. Kay typed for us, Kay did everything she could. Was Kay Struthers.
Yep.
When she died, Kay was close to Beth Howard, about 90-some years old. And she was still out here doing, not only getting papers out, the People's Tribune and all that type of stuff, but Kay was out here making sure that a better world could be possible. So she was one of the strong elements in the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. And let me leave you with this. You would go out with Kay on nights, some nights we say, well, let's go have a good time. The person that had all the energy was Kay. The person that would get all, am I right, Maureen? Who would all the young people, the young men come into the club and hit on? It was Kay. But she was a wonderful person. 90-some years old.
Mm. All right. That's a blessing. All right.
Listen, I think we already went over time, but I don't know if anybody's prepared to use the room right after this, so if we wanted to take a few more minutes, I would wanted to get to a point where we could at least field a couple of questions from the audience. But I'll wrap some things with Muhammad in that. So anybody got anything they may want to ask?
Yeah. Got a question up there, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment and a statement. First of all, I want to say that I was in different cities than you during this period, but we read about everything you were doing.
Okay,
you inspired the whole country, the whole generation.
Thank you.
And I guess you're so excited.
Thank you.
Now, I want to back up what Marcia said about drugs and drinking.
Yeah.
If I have to say anything to the young people,
yeah,
they can quit, they can wreck your organization mm-hmm. quicker than you can even think.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to watch it. If you see one of your members developing a drinking problem, you've got to get them help. You've got to deal with it. You've got to crack down on it. Because you'll be following some leader that's becoming a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to wreck. It wrecked the Socialist Workers Party. It wrecked the Panthers.
Mm.
Nobody's talking about
that. That's
this.
Right.
How much did drugs, yes, there was COINTELPRO,
yeah,
but all our organizations, But if you're drinking, you can't deal with disruption. You can't handle it. So part of a movement program, for me, I think one of the most important things is teaching the community and young people how to stay clean and sober so that you can deal with what's going to be coming down. Now my question to the panel is, you've all said things have changed. What do we do? You can't go in and organize Lowe's and Walmart. McDonald, you'll be out the door in a minute. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Anybody?
Hey, well, okay. One of the struggles we've been involved in a lot lately is around health care. Let me paint a picture. As UAW members, we have 355,000 union members. Of the 355,000, 100,000 are auto workers. We have 800,000 retired workers. That means something has to change in the old industrial union model. There's 800,000 retired workers that have some real needs, especially around health care. We have other things because, you know, regular issues. The way we are trying to deal with this right now is, one, we formed a retired workers for singles payer group. We meet in a union hall. And we're trying to fight around the issue of a single-payer system. We point out H.R. 676 is one of the bills we support.
Yes.
But in terms of changing, our fight is not against the employer. Our fight is against government.
Yes.
It is the responsibility of government to provide certain things. And I think sometimes we miss some critical points that the Tea Party people and the other folks is harp on. But see, there's some citizen rights involved in all of this. See, we have rights as citizens,
right?
And that's part of our struggle. But my bottom line is that what has changed is the nature of the fight that's taking place. Our demands are directly upon the government, because the employer simply can't pay for the health care. Mm-hmm. They can't pay for it. So in that sense, that part has changed, that our fight is no longer limited to just the fight with an employer. And it's fights that we need to be involved in our neighborhoods, right? Because Detroit does have these currents of violence within it. And it's not going to be solved by the government alone. Some of it's going to take organizing in your community, block clubs, right? And, you know, and becoming mean and intolerant about certain kind of behavior. But it's a whole different struggle today. It's very different.
Can I finish answering her question? I just want to add an atom to what Wasteland is saying. There's a theme. If you listen to us, there's a theme running through what everybody has said. Yes, we love basking in the old days. But the theme is that this is different. The question you pose is primarily a trade unionist question. Walmart doesn't have a union. So-and-so doesn't have a union. The struggle has to be different. I cannot overemphasize, and you brought up the struggle against HR 676. It may not be necessary to form a quote-unquote trade union. You have to develop other tactics and do other things. I mentioned earlier, and Wasteland mentioned it again, we have to focus on what exactly is the role of government. What exactly is our role and what we must make government do? Not ask them to do, but what we must make them to do. So the character of the struggle is different. So don't focus so much on Walmart doesn't have a union or so-and-so doesn't have a union. Focus on what we need to do to get this government and to get the people to understand what the real role of government must be in the era that we're living in. And I just want to try to emphasize that.
Sister, right here.
First of all, I want to reiterate what Linda Thompson said. I want to thank you for the struggle that you waged to keep America on track for their own moral value system. That's what you did. I want to thank the sister there for pointing out the fact that when we all came to this movement in the 60s, we came with ourselves. And it wasn't just the drug of alcohol that destroyed the movement. It wasn't just the drug of sex, sexual freedom. It's also the drug of, as this gentleman said so well, I am entitled to control you because I am white. And so many times our movement was decimated by that struggle for us to say, listen, you're an ally, we have self-determination, sometimes these are going to conflict. And I do feel, when you said we won, I don't understand what we won, because I still don't control my school. As a matter of fact, the public school system was started by Africans who were freed from captivity. We started the public school system, and now someone who doesn't know he's an African wants charter schools, which is controlled by corporations. So I think the struggle is to see where we can all unite, and we have to admit that we can't just use labels like even Black Panther or working class, whatever that is, with so many people unemployed. I think we need to talk about communities and what communities need to hold the government accountable. That's why I like what he said. The government is here to serve us, and the government has been hijacked by corporations. Mm-hmm. And I thought the purpose of this forum was to see where we could all meet on a common ground, and that European Americans would stop thinking they could control Black institutions. We controlled the right to get a job, to have equal pay. But we didn't control the institutions in our community the way they controlled theirs. Because if we did, they couldn't take it back from us so fast. And that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see this whole concept of community control against a government hijacked by corporations agreed on. That's what America is supposed to be about. That's where your freedom comes from, as a community. And somebody said it, when he talked about his individual right to his racism, I felt that was excellent. It's not individual rights, it's community rights. And I love what you said about the spiritual piece, because you can't be spiritual without being moral. You can't be moral without a sense of justice for all.
Thank you.
You know, for a lot of folks know that we've been a part of the host of this activity. And this is the first chance, first workshop I've been able to attend since Monday. We've been dealing with all kind of stuff, and I wanted to be at this workshop for sure. Couple of things. I work with Michigan Welfare Rights, and a lot of our work certainly come right out of Marion Kramer and some of the other folks that are sitting at this table. And this is a battle about poverty. And I want to address this to my sister here and to my sister here, because I don't want nobody to leave this damn room until you hear this rap. Okay?
Okay.
This conversation up here is about the kind of monies that we had. We was dealing with more than two cars and a chicken. We had the two cars, the chicken, the freezer, and everything else that was involved. Like Lynn said, there was a time that the General Motors worker in this country was the highest paid worker in the world. Everybody else modeled their contracts after what General Motors was getting. We wanted education. We wanted to be able to travel. We wanted to have time off. We wanted health care, have all of those things, exchanges and whatnot, baseball games, football games. We were engaged. There was a time when the Red Cross said we needed blood, and they went to Dodge, Maine. And they got enough blood in 2 or 3 days to last for the year. So when we're talking about the scale on which we were living, and most people didn't understand it because we were African-American, white, and we were Arab-American, a few others mixed in, and we was living large. We was partying with each other. I'm telling you, we took a cab from this corner to that corner and got out and gave a cab driver a tip and kept going. Don't you understand? We introduced manicured lawns. We had all that. We got people that were so nuts about a piece of grass, they got special clips to go out and get it. Clip every damn piece of grass, make sure they're all the same height. Just all kind of bizarre behaviors, but our lives were lives of peace. We wasn't scared. We had people running into our houses and ambushes and home invasions. This is new stuff to us. Schools being torn down. This is new stuff for us. We were in charge of our schools. We were in charge of our lives for a long time, because what we were doing was in line with General Motors, was in line with Ford Motor Company. It was all right with Chrysler, what we were doing. Things began to change, and that's why we started looking. Black people always are going to be in the shadow of the plantation. But I began to learn. I was a General Motors worker when I got laid off for a long time. My sisters and brothers got laid off for a long time. We went to unemployment. Long time went by. I went to the welfare office because I ran out of everything else. And they told me, you come back when your lights is off, when your rent is due, and when your stuff is on the front porch, that's when we gonna help you. And the person that told me that was one of them African names, you know, Kwame, Nile, Ethiopia, always one of them. And I began to learn there's something else other than race going on here. There's something else. The people that were abusing me, like these Negroes here with all these long names, they look like me. And I began to realize, okay, I remember that story. I met Jim a long time ago. I was standing on top of Wayne County Community College, throwing Molotov cocktails, bad everything. Jim said, come down here. What the hell are you doing? I know, you better start reading something. She said, read this. What is it? Read this so that you can try to learn how the world works. It's more than just race. Race is always a factor here, but there's something else going on. And this is about this class analysis. These people are about the business of profits. They will kill me. They will kill you. They will sell our children. They will fool this stuff around. They'll get a white man in here to take over the schools. And we'll say it's racism. Good. They'll move over here. They'll get a black guy to come in and take over the schools. Damn, what we need to do? That won't work. You're going to go here. Let's get a woman.
Teach Maureen.
All right, women. All right. Well, okay, we got the white guy, the black guy. Let's get somebody gay so we can be gender neutral. Get the gay one. And they still stealing from us.
That's right.
And after eating it all.
Teach Maureen.
The movie is Mouseland. Anybody ever
yes.
got that
yes.
book?
Yes, I got it.
Mouseland. And it's the same story. They get a cat that's white. They get a cat that's black. They get a calico cat that's black and white. They get a gay cat. They get a girl cat. They get a cat that's black, white, girl, boy, everything. In 4 years, they rule. 4 years, 4 years, 4 years. And finally, the mice step up and say, maybe we better start making our own rules. And they start subverting. Communist criminals in the room. I'm telling you, it is more to this story, and I know you know that already. But I want people in this room to understand, especially new workers that are coming in this area, you better get a grip. Lynn said it, but certainly Squeaky said this years ago. If you're born and you are not a computer, you in trouble. Things are in trouble. They're right. I'm looking at it. The world has changed. You ain't got no expectation of having a job. Because you going to college, that means nothing. You're going to have a school loan, and you're going to be unemployed. This is a new world. If we're going to eat, if we're going to have housing, if we're going to have to take health care seriously, we're going to have to use that paradigm. You get what you organize to take.